You're listening to the Marketing Rescue Podcast, the weekly show where we take a look at some epic marketing failures, along with some pretty amazing brand rescues and comebacks. And now your hosts, Nico and Chad.
Hey, Chad.
Yeah.
So when you think of the Japanese corporate culture, what's the first thing that jumps to mind, how it's different than how we operate within the US? Like, what's a fundamental, and could it even be a cliche, or it could be like the quintessential thing, but what would you say is like the thing that kind of jumps to your mind when you think of like the big mega Japanese brands and how they conduct their business?
I'm not very familiar with Japanese business culture, so I don't know. I guess this is super cliche, but principles of respect, like mutual respect. Yeah, I just don't really know very much about like Japanese business culture.
So you're very American, in other words.
Yes.
There are many things, but I think the fundamental thing that's a unwritten rule, and even a written rule in Japanese culture, business culture, is that at companies, employees must ask their supervisor's approval to make any decision, which is just very different than the US. If you think of like, we try to empower our people. And that's like a known fact for any big decision making, you need their written approval in order to do anything. Maybe that does boil back to the whole respect thing or dovetails into that. But I thought it was really interesting.
It is interesting.
That's one thing. Yeah, we just read this morning that Orange County might be opening up their schools again. So our little Emerson might leave Zoom at some point and go to in-class meeting for the first time of his life.
Yes. Yeah, you can actually have that normal send your kids off to school for the first time experience where it's like
crazy.
Tears and all kinds of feelings. And
you know, I'm going to speak for my wife at this point. There'll be no tears. She just wants him out of the house. It's hard letting a six-year-old sit in front of Zoom for 6 hours a day and teaching him how to make the letter H for a whole day or something, you know?
Yes.
But anyway, we digress. So today's really going to be a short episode, and we actually contemplated not even telling this story because it's not directly related to marketing or to advertising, but it's a really interesting story, and we're both two tech geeks, so we just thought we would share it.
Yeah.
Usually on our podcasts, we tell the stories of brands and brands who made it or brands who didn't. But on this story, we're going to be talking about technology and how business decisions, including marketing, shaped the technologies that we use every single day or that formed us, or was like a stepping stone of stuff that we use today.
Yep.
And yes, some brands will come into play, but this is more a story about the decision that got made behind the scenes before a product ever made it to the market and shaped the customers or consumers as we are today and the lives that we live today.
So to get started in this, if you're old enough, try to cast your mind back, close your eyes, picture this, right, to the mid to late 1970s. And if you're not old enough, you can try to imagine, maybe do some Google searches.
I was about Pinterest. To say, hop into Google Images.
Yeah, exactly. And from the invention of the TV up through the 70s, if you wanted to watch a show, you had one option.
You could go and sit in front of it.
Yes, you've got to look up the TV guide. You got to get that printed TV guide and look up when the show was going to air, what day of the week, at what time.
And you shape your entire day around that. When you eat, where you go, what you do.
Yeah, you'd have to call up your friends and say, hey, man, like I can't do anything. Or do you guys want to come over to do this instead of going to the pool or whatever you had planned? Like it all kind of revolved around your favorite shows or sporting events that you wanted to watch on TV.
I actually really miss those days.
It was nice, right?
Because now when we, once a month, when we actually want to watch something, we spend hours clicking through Netflix, jumping to Amazon Prime, going to Hulu. I prefer that whole decision-making process getting removed from my brain.
It was much simpler.
Yeah.
And if you missed it, you just missed it.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, that's it. So everyone might be talking about that big episode and it's just, okay, well, you know, you can't catch up.
Luckily, we know the moon landing was a hoax anyway, so we didn't miss anything.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing to see there. Move along. But right at the end of the 1970s, something mm-hmm. happens that changes all of that. In fact, it changes how we watch TV and movies fundamentally.
Yeah, and it's the invention of the video cassette recorder, or the VCR.
Mm.
Changed everything. For the first time, we could sit in front of a VCR to record our favorite show. And we could watch it whenever we wanted. That's a fundamental change in our behavior. Or we could rent a movie from the local video store and watch it. And you know what we could do? We could watch it again and again and again.
Ooh.
I remember we used to rent movies from the local library. That's where we would get our VHS tapes from. And we'd like watch it over and over and over. It's such good, fun memories, you know, as a kid growing up.
My best friend growing up, he had this really big VCR cassette collection of all the movies that they'd like recorded off of TV.
Yeah.
And then they had this binder that they alphabetized the collection, had it all organized by number.
No, there's a number with your best friend. You materialistic.
It's organization.
It's hey, a beautiful Bob, what thing. Are you doing tomorrow?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they had way more than we did. But yeah, it was cool. They had this really like organized process and all these movies we could go and watch. And so it was a lot of fun. But we would get in a lot of trouble when we wouldn't put them right back in the same order.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Have them ready for the next time.
Yeah, but for people that grew up in this time, there's a really the strongest sense of memories of our childhood and adolescence time, right?
Yeah.
Such good, fun memories for me thinking about it. And listen to this. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Remember that sound?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, learning to set the timer to catch your favorite show. That was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it wrong was a big deal.
Yeah, don't mess that up.
And finding out after the fact that you recorded 5 hours of something on a different channel, or adjusting the tracking. Remember that? You adjust the tracking to get rid of the lines on the screen. And remember,
it's an art form.
It is an art form because every single tape was a little bit different. I remember it so clearly. We had a Panasonic VCR. It was like a gray color. Then the back had this little dial that you would adjust the tracking to get rid of the blurry lines. We had all sorts of tricks too. You take the tape out, the VHS tape, and like slightly slap it on your palm because it was too tight and the lines will go away. And of course, remember to always rewind the videos before returning them to the local store or the library because you would get a fine.
Be kind. Please rewind. We all have that like tattooed into our memories.
I don't even hear that, but that's really funny.
That was the big thing at like Blockbuster.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the VCR was a huge change in the entire media landscape, and it changed our behavior. This is what's so interesting to me about this. And I know a lot of technology do that, but this really changed our behavior and the way we consume media and the way we interact with media.
Right. I mean, even just everything with streaming now, it wouldn't have happened if there hadn't have been this innovation first to make recording and playback a thing and to make that accessible to the public. So we just completely take that for granted today. But the VCR became this really integral part of our lives. And for the most part, we assume that the VHS format was really just kind of the way that it was. I mean, for me growing up, like that was, I knew there was kind of some other weird thing that some people had. But at the end of the day, just about everybody, at least that I knew, had VCRs. And that was just like what you had kind of thing.
Yeah, our neighbor across the road had a Beta. It was a smaller little tape and it's the only people we knew. Yeah,
exactly. So it's helpful to remember or learn for the first time that the way VCRs came to market and the VHS format in particular was far from preordained. Just like about anything in business, there's always some sort of battle for the market and market share. And the story of bringing video to home viewing is, I think, just a really instructional story for anyone interested in bringing new products or new technologies to market. Some of those same lessons are very applicable today. As we think about technology getting to a innovation saturation point where you get to a certain point and things become either imperceptible, like for example, 8K is bordering on imperceptible to the human eye.
We just talked about that, the difference between 4 and 8K.
Yeah, there's a certain point where you get to a certain speed and it's imperceptible, the differences in speed. So, you know, we've talked about Moore's law in the past with increases in processing speed. And at a certain point, instant is instant and you can't really improve on instant.
Yeah.
And so you have to think about what actually matters to consumers. And I think this story really kind of illustrates that point of why that's so important. And you can't just innovate technology for innovation's sake.
Yeah. And also very often what we use and what we see has a massive backstory of how it got there.
Yes.
And I think people take that for granted as well.
Yep.
So this story actually starts in 1950 in Japan, when Dr. Sawazaki developed a prototype videotape recorder. His invention started the race to see who can bring this technology to market first. And in 1956, Ampex, the company who is mostly known for making recording media like video and audio tapes, released the world's first commercial audio video recorder. It was called the Apex VCR 1000. Mm. But there were also six other firms basically fighting for this space. Like, who's going to bring this into every single household? And of these six, two that merged as leaders with electronics giants JVC and Sony.
And they were both working on two very different formats or standards. Mm-hmm. So JVC had their money on a standard they called VHS, which stands for Video Home System. And incidentally, did you know that JVC stands for Victor Company of Japan?
Mm-hmm. Did not know that, but I bet you they got approval to launch with that name.
Someone approved it. Yes.
That's interesting.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that, yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Now back to the story. In 1971, engineers Shireishi and Takano had a team at JVC working on a consumer VTR, or videotape recorder. Hmm. But in 1972, budget cuts at JVC forced restructuring, and so the project is scrapped. But despite funding, Shireishi and Takano kept working on it in secret. In 1973, it's kind of funny, like,
yeah, I love it.
You've got this clandestine skunk works in your company.
Especially in the Japanese culture, like we just talked about, like working on something in the secret, you know, without getting approval or getting your manager to be aware of it.
Right.
I'm sure these guys were, they were like, they were rogue.
In any business, that's like a big no-no, right? Like going completely rogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the project, even though it's under the radar, by 1973, they've come up with a successful functional prototype. Mm. And at the same time, engineers at Sony were working on multiple formats. One that you might not have ever heard of was called the U-Matic. The quality was good, but it was kind of hard to use, way too expensive to make. So Sony put their energy into the Betamax format.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Sony's history web pages, this name Betamax actually has a double meaning. Beta is the Japanese word used to describe the way in which signals are recorded on the tape, and the shape of the lowercase Greek letter beta resembles the course of the tape through the transport mechanism in the tape.
Wow.
That's kind of cool. And then, of course, the suffix max, we all know, is like maximum, was added to suggest greatness. So Betamax has this great picture quality and sound quality, actually the best of the consumer-friendly models.
And back then, this is very different than 8K and 4K. There was a fundamental difference between these tapes, right? I mean,
yes.
The quality was very noticeable.
Yes. Any change in quality is noticeable and can really affect the viewing experience. So even though Betamax was much higher quality, it was super expensive compared to VHS, and it could only record up to an hour on a tape.
Mm, which is problematic, right? And this became a focal point in the battle for consumer standards. The balance between quality and recording length, and achieving the balance at the price that consumers would pay.
Yeah.
The analog tape, or really, if you think about any tape for that matter, you can only fit so much within the cassette, right? We've all pulled the tape out as kids and see how long they were. They were long. We all did that, right?
Yeah.
And anything that you do to maximize the quality of the tape, think about making it thinner, run more smoothly or slower, it compromises the quality. So there's a balance. Both JVC and Sony were working on this balance, but they're slightly different approaches. JVC had longer recording time, but lower quality, and Sony had higher quality, but shorter recording time. And those two formats, VHS and Betamax, quickly merged as the two frontrunners in the battle of home video. Even while they were still in prototype, and the competition didn't stop at the quality and at the length.
In 1974, the Japanese Ministry of International Trade and Industry wanted Japan's video industry to standardize on just one home video recording format. They very nearly settled on Betamax based on Sony's unfinished prototype, but JVC lobbied against it because Betamax was a closed or proprietary standard. Mm-hmm. Sony owned the technology. It would have been kind of like a monopoly, and there'd be no open source ability to add to that. And so JVC's engineers really believed this open standard was important and was a convincing story. And a standard anyone could manufacture without paying licensing fees to Sony could be very attractive from a consumer benefit standpoint. So they push very hard, of course, for VHS. JVC enlists the help of other companies, including some of Sony's former partners, to try to get them to side with them. And a team from JVC even met with Sony's management to try to reach a compromise. But of course, Sony refuses because they're like, no, right. We can corner the market on this.
Yeah.
Ultimately, both standards end up going to market. So JVC and eventually other companies jump on to VHS and start making a bunch of VHS machines. Sony goes with its proprietary Betamax machines, and the two approaches couldn't have been more different.
Here are some of the two differences of how JVC and Sony took this to the tech market, building consensus and making friends, basically. JVC worked harder with the industry to build up support, and Sony didn't. When Japan tried to make an industry standard, they got Sony's former partners like Matsushika to side with them. It is possible that JVC may have ended up adopting the Betamax standards had Sony being a bit more open. Sony, on the other hand, refused advice of others, including companies they've previously partnered with, like Matsushita. They preferred better licensing deals over customer accessibility, and Betamax opted for high-quality proprietary formats, example like Minidisc and MSX and video game cartridges and Sony PlayStation. So they just approached this very differently.
And when video stores emerged later on, JVC partnered with companies like Paramount and Disney. Mm. By 1980, JVC's VHS format controlled 60% of the North American video cassette market. So there is this really big split between the two formats.
Yeah.
And Sony gets sued by motion picture companies for encouraging the recording of copyrighted material, and actually won the lawsuit, basically saying that their argument was that all we're doing is shifting the time at which somebody views something. We're not actually like making money off of reselling copyrighted material. So this is like, it's not a thing. So they actually win and fully enter the market in video stores, but VHS is already dominating a majority of the shelf space. And right off the bat, Betamax was often three times as expensive as VHS.
That's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Sony justified this by the quality, touting it as the highest quality standard, which makes sense if you want to position your brand as the premium brand.
Yeah, but some movies are longer than an hour, which led to having two cassettes, which meant that you had to stop, put another one in, and more importantly, you had to rewind.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a deal breaker right there.
Absolutely. So if you're going to be a premium brand, you need to have a premium experience. And think about longer movies like The Sound of Music that can stretch into the 3-hour range.
Three cassettes.
You know, it's just not practical. And if you want to record a live sporting event, concerts, anything that could stretch beyond an hour, which is a lot of things,
yeah,
it's just not convenient. So JVC focuses instead on giving customers what they want, which is that convenience factor of being able to easily record and watch whatever you want to watch anytime you want to watch it.
It's like you said before we started recording today, it's like the MP3 format. It's not the highest format, but it's small. So it gives you the ability to have tens of thousands of songs, which is what consumers want, versus having like a DAC file that you can have 100 songs, but it's the best quality.
Right.
That would never work today.
Yeah. It's the convenience factor.
It's the exact same thing. It's just regarding videotape.
Yes. User experience design 101 over here.
Yeah, exactly. As of 1984, 40 companies were supporting the VHS formats, and only 12 were supporting Betamax. So that's basically, for those people with really good math, 75% were controlled by VHS, which is high. In 1988, Sony broke down and adopted the VHS format, and the battle was over. VHS reigned the supreme videotape category until 2005, when they got crushed by DVD.
Yeah.
So they just won. Think about it. They had like 10 years of being the category leader, and then they got taken out. Today, few people even remember Betamax machines. Like I said to you earlier, I can only remember one person that had an actual Betamax machine. Everything else was VHS.
Yeah.
But the reason the JVC won the video wars is an instructional tale of an industry that evolves agreeing to a standard. They sacrifice short-term licensing profits for the sake of creating a market standard that customers really wanted. That's a big deal. It sounds arbitrary, but it's a really big deal.
Right. If you want to sell more of your product, you want to make it accessible to everyone, as many people as possible.
And you want to sell something that people actually want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Friction is not a good thing when it comes to selling your products. So no one argued that Sony had a worse picture quality, but quality alone only goes so far. You have to consider price, compatibility. Sony wanted to dominate the market and control it. And JVC wanted to create the standard that others could also follow, thinking, you know, hey, this is kind of an all ships rise type of a scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So the history of consumer electronics is filled with so many stories like this. We've seen it so many times now.
Yeah.
From vinyl and 8-track tapes to cassettes to CDs, through the battles for digital standards, including MP3s versus formats you've probably never heard of, like Ogg Vorbis FLAC.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And who can forget Windows Media Audio Codecs?
You make me think of, like, I can see it in front of my face, the Winamp app.
Oh, yeah.
You could like stack different little equalizers and, you know, like little plugins. It became like a little extension you can put the Winamp on top of. They played all the Windows Media Codecs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even with Apple, right? Apple had all these proprietary, you couldn't transfer your files from PC to Mac, and it was just back and forth, you know, it was like this really kind of a pain. And even Apple ended up having to bend to that and have interoperability. More recently, the battle for high-def home video between Blu-ray, HD, DVD, in case you weren't following along, Toshiba's HD DVD was released before Sony's Blu-ray, but both were released in 2006, and HD DVDs can store 15 gigs on a single layer. But Blu-rays can hold 25 gigs on a single layer.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main reasons that Blu-ray won the high-def disc market.
They did, but it's a little bit of a different story because like VHS and Betamax, consumers value storage space, right? You want to be able to store and record and whatever you want to play back. And you don't want to have to put in multiple discs, I suppose, with DVDs. That's the main factor. But in 2005, Sony and Toshiba started negotiating a compromise to avoid format wars between Blu-ray and HD DVD. Mm. That didn't happen with Beta and with VHS.
Yeah.
But there was still a high definition optical disc format war in the background. Blu-ray won in 2008 because shifting business alliances, including major film studios and retail distributors, Sony's decision to include Blu-ray players in their PlayStation 3 video game console. So that was the tipping point. And here's a really interesting fact. Talk about a holding on to a loser. Sony continued producing Betamax machines until 2015. It's like yesterday.
What?
Yeah. Their last production line shut down in the end of 2015.
That is amazing.
They just didn't want to give up.
Even after Blu-ray.
They were waiting for a comeback.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to learn from the format wars. You need to gear your strategy to the market.
Such an interesting story, right?
It is. Yeah. It really is. And just to see how it just repeats itself over and over and over again, it's same story, different technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Betamax's mistake was to really just focus on the output, the sound, the picture, in exclusion of all else. I mean, clearly there needed to be a lot of innovation that needed to happen with image and sound quality.
Yep.
But it was the exclusion of all else and the desire to watch an entire film or sporting event or whatever was much more important than quality at that point. And this is really true of any strategy. You always have to start with the end in mind. Start with the end user in mind. Don't get so wrapped up in technology for technology's sake, innovation for innovation's sake, whatever your social media platform is, your targeting algorithm, that you forget what it's like to actually use the product. So just don't get so wrapped up in the technology. Make sure you're thinking about things from all angles. Make it the best it can be while also making it the best for your consumer, the best experience the consumer can have, all things considered. And those sometimes are competing priorities, the technological advancement versus the ease of use.
Or in other words, no matter how good it is, a product, a campaign, or an ad, it is worthless if nobody engages with it. Which sounds obvious, but
right,
they didn't think about that at the time, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is a nice, sweet and short little episode, but it's a story we wanted to tell. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll speak to you guys next week.
You've been listening to the Marketing Rescue Podcast. This show is hosted by Nico Katsia and Chad Childress, the co-founders of KPI Agency, a marketing rescue agency. Be sure to visit marketingrescuepodcast.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, contact the hosts, and discover fantastic bonus content.